In Zylodon, fifth line, fifth medium-sized line, Margarita Ravina.
Margarita Ravina.
Right, so the next piece of Gemara, everyone in the world's heard of. Not everyone knows that the author of the next few lines is from Margarita Ravina.
Who is Margarita Ravina? Ravina? Not the same Ravina.
Mar, the son of Ravina. I don't know. But this is probably the most famous out of all the tefillos that are added at the end of the Shemoneh Esrei. This is the one that was actually instituted. And as we're going to see, we're going to learn a little bit now. Kihali Masayim Selusam Amrahachi. When he finished his davening, he said the following. Right, which we're going to see in a second. But all the Gemara we've seen up until this point were different Tanoim, Amoroyim that had their own tefillah. And now, the one that we choose, which is, I guess, a question of why, to think about, was chosen for our Shemoneh Esrei from Margarita Ravina. And this is the tefillah. Elokai, Nesor Lashoni Mira, Musafosai Medaber Mirma. So we're going to go slowly through this. Elokai, Nesor Lashoni Mira, so you should protect my tongue from speaking evil. Musafosai, my lips Medaber Mirma, from speaking deceit. So it's brought down in the Beis Yosef, it's the only thing that I saw in the Sefer for today. It's interesting that the difference in this tefillah, it says Mira and Mirma. What's the difference between bad and deceit? So he says as follows. He says when it comes to someone who speaks Ra, that's someone who is speaking evil through his mouth and also something which is in his heart. That they are equal, that they really hate you, 100%. Mirma, someone who speaks deceitfully, or similar to Laban, who was a Rami, is someone who acts a certain way, but he doesn't really speak that way about you. So therefore, he's not similar to our Parsha about the way the brothers spoke about Yosef. They were not Echad Bepev, Echad Belev. They didn't think and speak. Or they did speak the same way, negatively. But he says you have to protect me from both elements. A person who is a clear enemy, and also a person who may give the impression that he really is my friend, but the truth is, he's right. He'll stab you in the back. So you have to be careful.
Why did it have to be, after we said it, which you spoke very nicely, Shabbos, the end of the Shemoneh Esrei, Baruch HaKadosh, Baruch HaKadosh, Shalom.
Right.
Why did we need... Now, you said there were several tefillahs, but this was the one that was chosen.
Right.
Why, after tefillah of Shemoneh Esrei, did we need Elokai Nitzor?
Right. That's a good question. So, why this particular tefillah, or in general?
All right, this one's the one chosen. So I might ask, right. I'm not going to ask you, why did I need a tefillah?
Right.
I'm not asking you, this one was the one chosen.
Right.
But we said Shemoneh Esrei, that is a tefillah. And if I finished, I Baruch Hashem, I Baruch Hashem, Shalom, Hashem, Shalom, then we say, Elokai Nitzor.
Right.
I could have said, say, two for Pitlach Tel.
Right, exactly.
Why do I need, am I asking questions?
You hear Leslie? Okay, it's fine. That's why I'm asking, because we asked that question.
Sorry.
And the Salach explains that there's an issue about our tefillah. The issue is that it's, we have a specific set tefillah that we have, exactly word for word, paragraph to paragraph, and it's a set davening, but we're not supposed to have a feeling that our davening is just rote and routine, and we just daven and say the same things, and we just spit off one after the other. And therefore, he says the issue of our tefillah is that it potentially, good evening, potentially could lead to the feeling of using this language of tefillahs keva, that because if you daven the same way every single day, all the time, three times a day, four times a day. So therefore, the reason the Salach says that the Tanoim and the Amoraim added their own special tefillah at the end of the Shemoneh Esrei, after it was all over, was to give it their own twist, their own approach. Now, why this particular one is a good question. But we've seen, as the Salach explains, that that's why it's better to say this than a couple kapitel tehillim. That's how the Salach explains it. That there's an element of
a beautiful tape a number of years ago.
Yes.
By Pesach Krum. Mm-hmm. And he goes over what our thoughts should be during each tefillah that you're saying.
Right.
I don't know if you ever heard it. It's a very, very beautiful...
It's feeling the Shemoneh Esrei itself?
Yes, yeah.
And he goes through every paragraph?
He says what you should think. He says, when you say Mechaye HaMesim, you should think of the three tzaddikim that Shetaka come back. Moshe, this.
Right.
Well, it was...
It's tremendous...
He individualized each one, even though it was seen on color. He says, that's what we should think of, you know.
Right.
Right now he's in California.
A lot of Kabbalah.
He started in Chicago. He grew up in Long Island. He changed his name. A typical Sephardic name, I forgot what. He changed it to Bart Sadak. His father's name was Sadak.
Okay.
But he changed it for Gatsmit and Eretz Israel.
Yeah.
And he wrote some very interesting book, which is the Kavanot HaTfilah. And he goes paragraph by paragraph about that, about what Kavanot should be. But his twist might be a little bit different.
Because of more mystical and Kabbalah.
He's mystical. He's what he describes himself as Sfaradi Haredi,
right,
which is an interesting terminology. And he's also a black belt in Karate.
Let's put it in a black hat, I guess. Okay.
Well, put that too.
Use that too, okay. So, obviously there's a lot to study every paragraph, so at least we're going to go through this one. For those who are mekalel, who curse my soul, sidon, let them be silent. Let's just see the next few words. V'nashi, and my nefesh, ka'afel choltieh, should be like dirt, like dust. Every person should only think of me as like offer, like I'm dirt. We're going to discuss what that means in a second. Tosfos has an interpretation. The Marsha over here, look at the Marsha. The Marsha tells us, page Hay in the back, the facing page is page 8. Page Hay on the right, so it's two columns. On the right column,
Nafshi.
Elok, which one is it?
I see Nafshi.
Yeah, that's right. Nafshi Sidon, right. Marsha explains, all right, Shanafshi Sidon, that my soul should be silent, Melahoshiblahem, from answering them. That if someone says something nasty and just downright wrong to me, I should have the discipline not to sink down to their low level. What is it? Another explanation? Is Shapit Sidon, that my mouth should be silenced, Shosim and Kavli, those who curse me, Sidon, I should be silenced. Shidomuk Evan Mikalkel Mikalil Osi. Ode. That I should be exactly the stone, right? Exactly the stone who cursed those who curse me further. But Omer Nafshi Afar L'Choltieh, and that's what it means, that I should be like Afar. That people who curse me, they should just consider me like I'm a nothing, I'm nobody, and I should not be in the limelight, and people should constantly think about me. Let them just think
I'm
Afar.
They wouldn't curse you if they thought of you like that.
That's why I shouldn't. Where I follow. What?
If they thought of you as Earth,
right,
then they wouldn't be cursing.
Well, that's why you're misfollowed. Then Hashem should give them the perspective that, who is this guy? He's nothing. It's not a waste your time talking about him. Right? The only people that you really criticize are the people that you think are worth criticizing. You're not going to criticize the Nebuch, the guy in the street, the homeless guy in the street. Who cares? Like, what do you expect from him?
At the same time, you're taking the road of, instead of saying that people would want to curse you, make them think that I'm a big tzaddik, a very important guy, you're blessed, and it takes the opposite path to say he's just not worth bothering with.
Well, it's also there's an element of you wouldn't want to become a Baal Gaiva. You have to humble yourself.
Right. Now, it's sort of a similar thing, the concept of Baal Tit Vadai Al Hamalchut.
Overconfidence. Right, exactly. Now, Tosfos has a completely different interpretation, which maybe none of us would have ever thought of. When we say "v'nafshi ke'afar l'choltieh," going back to Yud Zayin Alef, top left, the first Tosfos, Tosfos says "ma'afar ein mikabel kalia," just like la'olam, it can never be destroyed. You take dirt; it's just dirt. How are you going to really destroy it? It's just going to sit there. It'll be there forever. So too, what you're saying, v'nafshi ke'afar, means Kein Hiratzon Shizari Lichal Olam Kamo Shehu Omer Bahayazarcha Kafar Aretz. When Hashem gave the bracha that you should be Kafar Aretz, means that you should be eternal, that your children should continue in your traditions and whatnot. And therefore, Benafshi Kafar Chotia, according to Tosos, is a bracha of Nitzchis, of eternality, that your children should carry forth your traditions.
But basically, a person is off of them, you say, in the upper side, that off.
True. Right.
To begin with.
But in between, you're not.
So this is something I've often thought of, is that, yeah, that if somebody starts up with a tzaddik, who has tremendous powers, what the tzaddik does to them to stop them from killing him, if he's about to murder them or something like that, puts out his hand and says, shuv la'afracha. And you say, well, why that? Why not the mood to it? But it's not, you know, because it's what it's saying. In a sense, it's sort of giving them a second chance. It's saying, you're an evil person and everything. Return to your elemental state. Now you can build up into something better. You know, it's a sort of a left-handed compliment.
Okay. All right. Let's move on. So the Nash, that's, again, that's the interpretation of Tosos. Psach libi b'sar secha, open up my heart to your Torah. Of mitzvah secha tirdof nafshi, and when it comes to your performing mitzvahs, let myself pursue them. Let me go after the performance of mitzvahs. Now, before we continue in this paragraph, it's a very interesting explanation of the Netziv. The Netziv tells us that there are four yisodos. There are four elements of the world: Eish, Ruach, Mayim, and Afar. And talking about Kabbalah, each one of those attributes which are found within could be a positive thing, could be a negative thing. Eish could be an angry person. Or you consume your anger. What was that? What were you going to say?
Eish could make everything. Without Eish, I can't nearly live. Anything I want to build, basically need Eish.
Right.
Yet Eish, on the other hand, destroys it.
Right. That's a good way of looking at it.
If you even say Kadosh Baruch Hu, Eish Ochelah.
Right. And the Torah is also compared to Eish. Right. So there's positive and negatives.
The Torah is Eish, and the same thing you say in Mayim and the Torah, which are two of the opposite.
Right. That's true also. Right. Another one of the elements, this is a sidebar to the Ziv, is Ruach. Ruach, you can be a Baal Gaiva. You can be a big shot, big haughty person. A Ruach could also mean, like, spiritually, right? You're a spiritual person.
So Ruach is the same thing like Eish, too?
Right.
I can't live without Ruach.
Right.
And yet Ruach can kill you.
Exactly. So everything in this world, all the basic concepts of this world, the four Arbi Sodos, can be used positive or negative. Everything. Mayim and Afar. So Afar was, going out of order, Afar is also the idea of being humble. You can be humble, but you can also be so unbelievably low that you can get depressed, which is also, you can't do, I'm not going to do anything, I'm worthless. And Mayim, the explanation is based on Taiva, the physical desires of the world. And of course they could also represent Torah and other positive attributes. Now, he says that out of these four Yesodos, they are actually two separate categories. This is what the Netziv says. He says, I'm just going to read it, it's worthwhile listening to. The Eish for Ruach, that's one category. Fire and Ruach, what? Spirit, wind. Hema, Me'oirim es Adam. Those two things have the ability within you to awaken you, to arouse you. The fire within, the Ruach, the spirituality within. Mayim v'afar, water, and afar have the ability to manichim also. The kind of water can cool off the fire. That afar, you can throw afar on the fire. It's very low. That's what those two things represent. She says like this: the paragraph of what is being said over here by Marbury Dorvina is that you should use both of them to your ability for the right things. He says a person who has the control over Yisodi Eish V'Ruach, which is that desire, that fire, what is that supposed to be used for? That's for mitzvos Bein Adam Amakom. When it comes to serving a Kadosh Baruch Hu, then you have to utilize and tap into that element, your anger, not your anger, but that energy. And that's why in this paragraph, as we just read, we say, mitzvah secha tirdof nafshi. Grab hold of that feeling of Eish and Ruach and run with it when it comes to performance of mitzvahs bein adam l'makom. However, he says, when it comes to bein adam l'chavero, when it comes to you with another person, that's not the time you're supposed to connect to your Eish, or you can get angry, you're a very hot-headed individual. Rather, when it comes to bein adam l'chavero, explains in the Tziv, you're supposed to tap into the afar. And that's what the paragraph says, that you should be viewed as afar, which means that humble, and also with the way you deal with people in that manner, not in a very quick and a fast, pushy way. So that's how the Tziv explains this idea, that this paragraph represents bein adam l'makom, which is serving Hashem. When it comes to serving Hashem, the mitzvah secha tirdof nafshi, right? That you should do it with enthusiasm, with your ish. But when it comes to your interaction with fellow man, v'nafshi ka'afar l'chol tiyeh, then you should be more calm, and you should be nicer and respectful to another. That's how the Tziv explains. Let's move on. V'tatzileini mefegara, that you should save me from a bad encounter, mi'yetzer hara. And then he throws in, which we don't have this nusach, me'ishara, from a bad wife. Umikol ro'os ha'misragshos l'bol olam, any negative thing which will threaten us, which is going to come forth into this world. V'chol choshem alai ra'a, anyone who thinks something negatively about me, mehera hafer atzasa, immediately you should annul their etza, their counsel, that which they wish to do to me. Kilka makshavosam, their thoughts should be completely discarded, as though it doesn't, right, or distorted. What?
Should go to nothing.
Exactly, should just go to nothing, which is similar to the idea of the nafshi ka'afar, should just be like, just leave me alone. Yilorotzonim reifi, behegion libi ofanecha Hashem suri begoli. Now, even though in the Amida we have this sentence before Elokainasor, we also say it at the end right here as well, which is interesting. If you, this paragraph, he only began with Elokainasor, right? Omar Hachi. When we say Elokainasor, because we say before that we say the Hiyoratzon, then Elokainasor, and then we say it again, the Hiyoratzon. We say it the second time because that's what is the nusach of this. Tefillah is at the very end. But we also say it the first time because otherwise, in order to make a hefsek, a separation between the bracha and this additional paragraph in which certain answers were allowed to, during tefillah, kedusha, whatever, certain parts you're allowed to respond to.
Okay, what is the exact explanation of this pasuk? Yila ratzon should be the wish.
Of imrei fi, of my
lips.
Right.
V'hegyon libi l'fanecha, what do you mean, I should have love?
V'hegyon is like the thought process or the meditation which was in my heart should be before you. Now, it's a good question, exactly what does this mean? So, Mepharshim touch upon this. It's significant that it's at the very end. This is actually the Radak. There's other things we'll get to. But the Radak, answering that question, says this is the meaning of this sentence. The sentence of immediately after Elokai Nesor, there's a Gemara over here. Good evening. The Radak says 6:30 on the nose, or around the nose. This is what the Radak says. The Radak says this is what it means. Yihu Ratzonim Refi means you Mashemarti Lefanechem Afet. Whatever it was that came out of my mouth during this prayer that I just finished saying. Even the things, this is like a parenthesis of what this sentence, even the things that actually I did not say, Ella Chashavti Believi, I was thinking about it in my mind, in my heart, Yil Ratzon Lefanecha, it should be your will before you, Kidavarim, Rabim Yachshav Adam Believo, there are many, many things that are thought in one's mind or one's heart, but Yochla Dabir came to Slasa, that don't actually come out of your mouth. So therefore, according to the Radak, Yihil Ratzon Imrei Fi, whatever I said, let it be. But then the next part of the pasuk is, what was the rest of the pasuk? Even the things that are in my heart, which I didn't actually say in the Shemone Esrei, which I really wanted to, but I may not have known how to articulate myself properly, let that also be before you. Should also be accept that feeling. Not only what I asked for, but even the things that I may not have even thought, maybe I didn't even think to ask for. It was the deepest, in the deepest resources of my mind that I didn't even think to ask those things.
I think I once learned that after this pasuk, before Rosh Hashanah, you could think or say to yourself anything which you want to ask for, whether it's a Rosh Hashanah or...
In English, right? I was told recently that you could ask for anything you want, and you're allowed to say it in English, so that's why I don't understand. And
I was supposed to say your name too, yeah. At that point,
At that point, right after this, clearly this is
some sort of a reboot. But what's interesting about this is that the Shemone Esrei, we know, is one part of the tefillah that your lips move, and one way or another, it's articulated in such a way where it's actually spoken at least loud enough for you to hear it yourself.
Right.
So you're doing a reboot of the thing, and the things I just thought, which is clearly excluded from the Shemone Esrei, the way the Shemone Esrei is constructed.
Yes.
It's very much, I think, a parallel thing to when we say Al Chait on Yom Kippur, on Yom Harim. We say Al Chait, we say the things we've already said, we've spoken, and the things that we haven't said are known unto you.
Right. Yeah. So that's how the Razak. What's that?
Comments, when you say your comments, this is about.
The things I don't know about.
But this is in tefillah where you're actually adding a reboot of saying the things I've said, but even the things I just thought and I didn't really articulate. Maybe it's a hege is like the beginning of a thought. It's not even a fully formulated thought. Things that I just thought and even vaguely thought should be valid.
So you have a problem during the day and you think of it. You can think of an S for a tefillah for that at this point.
Absolutely. I mean, because. This tefillah, which, again, it's interesting that this is the one that was chosen, but all the Gemara before this, as well as some of the Gemara which we're going to see tonight, are different Tanoim, Amoroim, that came up with their own tefillah, right? And as we mentioned a little bit more last week, each special tefillah that was said is somehow connected to that individual's life. So it became very personal, because otherwise the tefillah may become... wrote. It's exactly the same, so what's the difference? So you have your own personal connection, your own personal idea. So maybe this particular tefillah, which is more generic and it has a lot of concepts, that's why they felt this is an appropriate tefillah. But it's interesting that, as we talked about the slach, the issue is that if we daven three times a day and it's the exact same prayer, so because of that they instituted that you can add... They added an extra paragraph on their own. So what do? We take this paragraph, which now may still be the same issue, that it's still wrote, because it's the same thing we're saying every single time. And therefore, maybe you would, Badafka, you would think it's kedai to say some, in your own words, something which is meaningful, which pertains to you. And it's not an issue, because officially the tefillah is over. That's why once you say... Baruch Hashem Shalom, and then you say the Hirotzon Imrefi. At that point, officially, the bracha, you're done with the Shemone Esrei. But since you haven't taken your steps back, you're still considered to be standing with Nehemelech. You're still davening to Hashem. And therefore, that's an appropriate time for you to make those insertions.
I heard over from, I forgot from who, and I forgot which Mashkiach and which Yeshiva it was, but there was a certain Mashkiach and the Yeshiva. He used to tell all the Bachram that what he wants them to do is every time they daven the Shemone Esrei, they should think of one new nuance, one new meaning, one new something in the Shemone Esrei every single time that they never thought of or considered before. Not easy to do.
No, it's absolutely not. It's not easy to do at all. In fact, the Gemara talks about that later on in the fourth parak. It talks about how it's necessary that your tefillah should not be tefillah's kevah, should not be a set tefillah. And it says that one of the things that you need to do is possibly to be mechadish v'adamah, that you have to actually add something new in your Shema Esrei.
New in words or new in thought?
Apparently new in thought. Mm. But we don't hold like that. That's not necessary. But at least the Gemara does say that it should not be daimel of kamasoi. It should not be a burden. It should act as a burden to. So that's an issue, that on one hand we have set prayer, and yet it's not supposed to become rote and routine. So that may be a way to be able to counter that issue. Okay. But again, according to the explanation of the Radak, similar to the beginning of our Shemoneh Esrei, Hashem Sposei Tivdach, which we have the famous mashal, the person who's standing in front of the king, and the king said, "You have 30 seconds, whatever you say, I'll give to you." And he was just so awestruck standing in front of this great man that he couldn't open up his mouth. And that's the reason why, that's really the feeling we're supposed to have when we're standing by Shemoneh Esrei, Dolef Emiyata Omid, that you're standing in front of a king. So that how can you possibly just start rattling off a bunch of prayers? Hashem Safosai Tiftach. You need God to literally open up your mouth, because if we understood who we're standing from. And therefore, at the very end of the Shemoneh Esrei, appropriately, the Radak explains that that's why we have this last sentence of Yigil Rotz and Yivrei Fi. Even the things that we said is most certainly being that we're standing in front of this great king and we should be so awestruck. And therefore, it's possible we may not have asked for everything that we really need. And therefore, Behegin Liba Fanacha, you know what's in our hearts and what we really need. So help us receive those things.
When you're standing before Kodesh Baruch Hu, even though you know that his powers and his mightiness and everything is infinitely and inconceivably greater than that of any Melech Basar Badam, we know we're standing before Rachamah, which is a quality that kings may have to a limited degree, but generally don't. So you should feel more comfortable than you would with a Melech Basar Badam.
Right. Now the problem is getting too comfortable.
But the thing is, as a human being, if you're going to do it every day in front of the same people, it's like a person coming in front of a judge. You know, court experience people have. You know, if you keep going in front of the same judge, or use the lawyer, what you do is you use a lawyer.
Hopefully not the defendant, though.
You know, who practices mainly in front of one judge. No matter how much you want to be separated, you know, we're only human beings.
Right.
We're only human beings. And
true. You're right. That's an issue. It's an additional issue. Anything that we do often,
you become too rote, too familiar, and it's already in nature.
Right, exactly. So that's the Indian of being machadish something, which it's very hard to do. All right, let's move on. Rav Sheshes. All right. Rav Sheshes ki havi yosid b'tanisa. Rav Sheshes, after he finished
fasting. Machines.
Yeah, they're all telemarkers.
No, this is to invite you to Davitz up a papa in 5 towns.
Very nice. Yes. Unfortunately, I can't make it. Sheshes ki havi yosef.
Father's home.
Ki yosef, v'tanisa. When Rav Sheshes was sitting in fast, buzz to the matzli yomar hachi. This is also a tefillah which we are found in a lot of the Sidurim, that he would say the following tefillah. Very powerful, beautiful tefillah. Ribon holomim. Goliu fanecha bizman shebeis hamikdash kayom, as long as the beis hamikdash stood. Adam choytim makriv karma. Person did sin, so what do? You bring a karma. Vein makrivim mimenu el chelva v'damo. What is actually put on the mizbeach? It's fats and the blood sprinkled. It was schaper lo, and that form as a kapara. The Ashav, and now he says this, Yishavdi b'tainis v'nismai b'chelvi v'dami. Now I'm a couple ounces thinner, right? Yirotzeim v'fanecha shehechelvi v'dami shenismait, the fats within me that have become less because of my fasting should be ki'ilu hikravti b'fanecha al-gami ha-mizbeach v'tirtzeini. It should be just like that I actually brought this onto your Mizbeach, and you accepted it, Beratzayin. And according to the Marsha says, of course, you can look and see this, it's a small Marsha, but it's, of course, it's the next one on page A. So I'll just see it inside. Bizman Shabbat Mikdash Kayim Adam Chayt. So it says, according to Rav Sheshes, he must hold the Feed Das Hamafarshim, those who hold the Tam HaKarbanos, the reason for sacrifices. What's the significance? You think about the Beis Hamikdash, this beautiful, you know, unbelievable place that you would go to. You can just picture and imagine it. The reality is there was blood pouring all over the place. There was sacrifices and animals being sent. Blood on you. It was unbelievable. Exactly. So, but what's the inyan of really all these karbanos? So the Marashah says that Rav Sheshis was under the opinion that the purpose of the karbanos, she'achshav adam, that you should think, ilhu chai misa, that really Ataka deserved to die. I did something so bad, so disrespectful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that this is my punishment. But because of Hashem's abundant level of kindness and compassion for us, shenefesh behema ba tachas nafsho, that Hashem will take this animal instead, tachas nafsho, was that omer bizman shebeis mikdash kayim. That's why Rav Sheshi said, when the Beis HaMikdash is standing, Adam Chayto Makriv Nefesh Behema Shu Hadam V'Achelev Tachas Nasha, that it's instead of my own blood, I should have been killed. But instead Hashem allows this carbon. And therefore, which is one of the mistakes that people have when it comes to Kaparos, it's not time that my sins go onto this bird, but rather you're supposed to look at it and realize that everything that's happening to this little bird, I deserve. And therefore, that's an opportunity to hopefully arouse a person to want to do tshuva. And therefore, that's the idea of also the karbanos. Not that I'm forgiven because my sin goes on the animal. That's preposterous. But it's a visual aid to inspire you to want to do tshuva. And therefore, that's the idea that really it should be my blood. It should be my fats that's been sacrificed on the altar. But God doesn't allow human sacrifice. So therefore, he allows an animal, and therefore I can look at it, and that'll inspire me to do tshuva. B'yachshav says in Marashah, she'ev yasemekdash kayim, hini b'taneseh, I'm sitting in a fast, sh'nizmai b'navshu chel b'vidami, I'm lessened my fats in my blood within me, harin ein chetzarach l'nefesh mehema tachas nafshi. I don't have an animal anymore to be able to bring as a sacrifice, so instead let this be instead of that. So therefore you should be mekabel my fast as though I actually brought a carbon. Okay. Again, obviously the idea is that it's not just bringing a sacrifice, but that inspires someone to do tshuva. And that's also the Indian of a tinus. A tinus isn't just, alright, let's fast, now let's go to a double feature because, you know, I'm starving and I want to divert my attention, so I'll just watch a couple good movies. But the idea is supposed to inspire you to do tshuva, which is the ikar, the most important aspect of a tinus. Okay. Let's see at least one more piece. This is an interesting one. Rav Yochanan kihavi misayim sifra de Iyuv omer hachi. When Rav Yochanan finished the book of Iyuv, he would say the following, and Rashi up top explains what's so great about the end of Iyuv, because al shem she'iyuv nifter b'shem tov, because at least when Iyuv died, he ended off dying b'shem tov, with a good name. So he had, even though he had tremendous pain and suffering in the Sionos throughout his life, he ended off on a good note. But the Mefarshim, before we actually see what this Iyuratzen is, tells us a very interesting halacha. And we know when it comes to, let's say, Er Pesach, no one fasts because there's a Siyam, right? It's a Siyam. So the Mefarshim bring down, the Pnei Yeshua does, that apparently the fact that he finished Giyuv, which Giyuv is not a Gemara, it's Nach, right? It's a Sefer Nach. But nonetheless, Rav Yochanan, when he finished it, he would make a Siyam, the Siyam Sefer Giyuv. Not just that he finished it, the Siyam means he finished it, but it also implies that he did something to acknowledge completing it, that it was of significance. I just want to share this halacha because it's very kedai to hear this, and then we'll go back into the Sihir Ratzon. So I'm just going to share this halacha very quickly. So it's brought down in the Pnei Yeshua. He says that when Rabbi Yochanan finished this Sefer Yiv, he would constantly make a sudas siyum. He would actually make a meal in order to celebrate his completion of this. And he brings down a Gemara in Shabbos that says, the afil b'siyum sechta, Havi Avdi Yom Tovad Rabbanim. We're familiar that when it comes to the concluding of a Masechta, you also make a Siyam. Also. And therefore he says, Dikashosim Siyam al Sefer Nach, Kiyuv, Yesh Lasos, Yoma Tovah Rabban Lorabban. We can learn out from here that making a Siyum is not limited to a piece of Gemara, but it's also concluding Nach. But it's brought down in the Piskei Tshuvas. He says that there is a slight difference. He quotes the words of Shlomo Kluger, Sal. He says that there's a difference between finishing a Masechta and finishing Nach. And what is that difference? He says like this. This is according to his opinion. Im lamad lefi tumo. Let's say you're learning Nach de Stam. You just happen to be learning, and you're learning, and you're not paying any attention to what day or month it is. And it happens to be v'siyam be'er Pesach, that you finished around the time of this. Yochul yosafil al-siyam navi echad. You're about to make a siyam on Erev Pesach, even on
Eve.
On Eve. Doesn't make a difference. In fact, when I was in Maine, way back when, I learned Sefer Yoshua with a couple of high school kids, whatever. And it happened to be approximately in the time of Erev Pesach, we finished Yeshua. So I couldn't have made a Siyum on a Gemara, I could have made a Siyum on a Gemara. It caused a whole bunch of controversy, as you can imagine. But we stood, and as there were a bunch of firstborns that were waiting to hear a Masechta, we made a Siyum on Sefer Yoshua. We made a Siyum on Sefer Yoshua. And to me, I felt that was even more appropriate because it got those two high school students, give them a lot of chizuk, that they participated in the Siyum. They weren't shy to finish the Masechta. I mean, forget about it. But to have learned and to have felt accomplished over learning that, not a problem. And according to Rav Shlomo Kluger, as long as you finish it and you didn't save it, I just finished this week and I'm just going to save the last pasuk for Pesach, that you're not allowed to do it.
Finish it at the right time.
Right, exactly. But he says like this, when it comes to making a Siyum on a Gemara, he says, if your purpose of studying Nach is to make a Siyum, oz al masechtas gedola, which is not like a small masechta, but a regular masechta, kivan dahavi mala alim, but since it's such a tremendous accomplishment of learning, lo yeh dahavi shlo l'shma, nami nechshav Siyum. Even if the reason why you're doing it is shlo l'shma, which means you're doing it to get out of something, including a fast on Erev Pesach, it's still a valid Siyum, even though you may have saved it. It's only a Sudas Mitzvah if you tumo, you happen to get to it around Erev Pesach. It doesn't mean dafka, but it means maybe a week before or whatever. But when it comes to learning Masechta, we're more lenient. But even though it's something which you would probably blow your mind, on Erev Pesach, there's nothing wrong with making a Siyum on a Sefer of Nach. And who in the world would ever have done such a thing? Our Gemara, Rav Yochanan. If Rav Yochanan can do it, you know what? We can probably do it too. So let's just see this last paragraph of Rav Yochanan, and we'll stop. So Rav Yochanan, he having the same sifra di yiyuv, Omer Hach, he would say the following: Sof Adam Lamos Sof Behemul Shchita. The very end of a person is death, and the end of an animal is Shchita. So on this, the Chida asks, what do you mean? An animal, every single animal in the world is ritually slaughtered? What do you mean with so behemo shchita? So he says that the way of reading this sentence is that the ultimate level, the ultimate tikkun for an animal, even though Pita may not agree, it's cruelty to animal, the truth is the ultimate level of elevating that animal is for it to be shechted, right, in a ritual, in an appropriate halachic manner. So too, sof adam alamos, that the true level, the true greatness of a person is not in this world, but rather it is going to be in another world. But kol lemisa heim omdin, and everyone is standing lemisa to die, which is a pretty scary thing. The Ben Yoyada explains that even though he had tremendous tsar, you can say it's not fair. Why did he have all these problems? He was a decent person compared in Bobas to Avraham Avinu in some ways. So the Ben Yoyada says that he was actually a Gilgul Neshama of Terach. Terach was Avraham's father, which is interesting again that they compare the two, like father, like son. And he was, Terach as we know, is an Oyvind of Onazar, he's a huge idol worshiper. So therefore, it's possible that the tsar that a person receives in this world is not because of the things that you did in this world, but it could be a tikkun for something that you did prior, however we understand that. And therefore, that's how the Ben Yoyada explains Vakol Lamisa Haim Omdin. Everyone could be standing Lamisa, which means that you should not necessarily assume that the person who's getting tsar is because of what he's doing, what he did wrong currently. And that's a way to speak nicely about Iyuv, that he didn't necessarily deserve such punishment, even though it's against the different Gemaras. Asher mi shigadol b'Torah, v'amoloi b'Torah. Great, praiseworthy is the person who grew up in Torah and is currently also an amol b'Torah. He toils in Torah, which we often do not find. Very often we find the person who is exposed from childhood in utero to Torah. It's an easy way to want to rebel. I can't wait to see what the real world looks like. I'm sick of having to associate myself with all this. So therefore, the greatness is that not only were gold of the Torah, that you were able to retain it, and that you didn't feel it was necessary for you to look outside for something else. V'yosa nachas ruach liyotzro, v'gold of b'shem tov, v'nifter b'shem tov. You grew up the greatness of being born and grow with a good name, and to also pass in a great name, with a great name in this world, which of course, is, as we mentioned in Rashi, that is how Iyov died, with a shame tov. The love Omer Shlomo on this, Shlomo Mel said in Koheles, tov shame and shemen tov. Better is a good name than good oil. The Omamaves miyom nevaldo. Better than is the day of death than the day in which a person is born. And the reason why tov shame and shemen tov is if a person takes a candle, you take some oil and you light it up. So in this dark room, fortunately, it'll help us out. We'll be able to see. It'll light up the whole room. When it comes to, but how about the next city, the next state? No one's going to be able to benefit from that little candle. It's something, but it's not going to help us too far. When it comes to a good name, Tov Shem, that's better than Shem and Tov, because that spreads further, much, much further than even good oil. And what does it mean? We'll conclude with that greater is the day of death than the day a person is born, because when a person is born, there's a tremendous suffix, the doubt of what will you be? Will you be a tzaddik? Will you be a rasha? Will you be able to withstand the staleness of life? But when it comes to a person's death, that's better, because at that point, it's already known and 100% guaranteed that that person lived a good life, a complete life, and therefore all of his challenges, God willing, he had passed, which is better than the challenges of the unknown of birth. Stop here.